The Electric Circus. Insert coin. Thank you. Press start.
That's right, The Electric Circus. The totally geek-tastic podcast devoted to news, reviews, rants, and raves. All your favorite stuff. Games, gear, cons, cosplay, and more. And here's the ringmasters for today's circus, Ray Gun and Uber Nerd 527. So let's go down to the center ring. The show's about to begin.
Hello. Welcome to our, our second live discussion here on Instagram Live. And for those of you who are listening to the podcast recording, which we'll be putting up a little later on, welcome as well. This is the Electric Circus Podcast. We are a podcast that talks about all things that you nerds out there are interested in. Comics, movies, TV, video games, and more. What we're going to be doing today is we're going to be doing a live discussion of The Mandalorian Season 2.
Season 2.
We're very excited about that. By the way, we're part of thearcadearchives.com. So if you want to see more from us, go to thearcadearchives.com. And you can actually see all kinds of podcasts, articles, news, and stuff. And here with me now is my partner in crime, Danny, the ultrasonic player. Say hello to the people, Danny.
Hi, how's it going, Arcaders? Good to see you.
I myself am Josh with the Uber Nerd, and we're very excited. We're both huge Star Wars fans. We are so excited to talk about The Mandalorian Season 2. Now, really quickly, before we jump into Season 2, let's jump into just a very quick overall what we thought about Season 1 of The Mandalorian. Why don't you start, Danny?
Okay, well, starting with Season 1, it was just a perfect way of introducing, or rather reintroducing, audiences to the Star Wars universe, but really doing it in a way that kind of offers a different angle, a different lens into this Star Wars galaxy. And I know Pedro Pascal, when he was interviewed for Season 1, he pretty much talked about that it's basically the same. It is the Star Wars galaxy that we know and recognize, but just in a different way. And really kind of reintroducing us, but doing it through the lens of a new character, really, really kind of allowed us. It was a really new way of going back to a place that's very familiar, but yet maybe not everything that, but maybe not too familiar, given that we do go to new locations. And with a new character who is not force sensitive, but rather, you know, at first just a guy who's trying to, you know, get by in a galaxy that's very, very lawless right now, especially given the time frame that it takes place in, given that it does take place after the events of Return of the Jedi. Through that, you're able to see, you know, what he does, and along the way, he finds himself the character really finds himself being a part of something much bigger than even he realized. But in the end, he basically, he goes for it, and really kind of starts to, in a way, discover himself, even though he's already an adult and not a teenager, but yet he does find himself, I guess, in a way, on his own hero's journey, or at least as much as a mercenary or bounty hunter like him can.
I like that. For me, I love Season 1 of The Mandalorian. It was a great introduction. I like that it didn't necessarily connect to the complete galaxy just yet. It kind of had it was kind of in its own little part of the universe, and it kind of had its own little thing. And it didn't necessarily connect to a whole bunch of things, but at the same time, it planted the seeds for things. I think one of the biggest parts of Season 1 was when, and I know they probably did this on purpose, when they introduced force healing into the universe. And then, you know, a day or two later, Rise of Skywalker came out, and spoiler alert, Rey used the same thing. I thought that was really cool, and a really cool vehicle for Star Wars to kind of experiment and try new things, not just story-wise, but also, you know, technologically-wise, because they have all the technology that they use to do The Mandalorian and to make it look like it is a movie was really, really cool. And I'm very, happy with the first season. So anyone in the chat, real quick, we'll give a few minutes, if a few seconds, if anyone in the chat wants to throw down any thoughts on season one of The Mandalorian. If you guys are watching, feel free to join in and let us know what you think. Did you like the season one of The Mandalorian? Did you think that it was a good start? What did you think? Any questions out there, just fire away at us, and we'll put it through throughout the entire discussion here.
Speaking of the chat, I just want to give a shout out to ChrisJ1073 and FlexG7. Hello. Good to see you guys again. Finished saying, if you have any questions, please fire away. We're more than happy to answer them.
That's we're not extreme experts by any stretch of the means, but we definitely love Star Wars, and I think we're both very knowledgeable about it. So we can try to answer it as best to our abilities. So let's jump in now. Season two of The Mandalorian. Now, again, very quickly, let's give our overall thoughts, and then what we're going to do afterwards is we're going to go over each episode individually and kind of talk about, give a little description in case you haven't seen any of the episodes of The Mandalorian, and then kind of just talk about our thoughts about it. So I'll start off this time with the second season. I thought was very surprising and very satisfying as a season. So what did you think?
Well, basically, to start off, season two pretty much did what any good second season does, which is really just now that we've established our characters, now we can really start to really get into the core of what makes the series great, and as well as the core of the characters and things like that, and really develop them. And the way season two, from start to finish, it really explored a lot of things about the main character, Din Djarin, as we know. But let's face it, I mean, I think just about everybody calls him Mando for the most part. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. But really just him continuing on the quest that he's been charged with, which of course, again, as people now know, his job is basically to bring Baby Yoda, or as we find out later on in the season, Grogu, to his own kind. Now, of course, I was under the impression that it was to reunite him with other people of his own species, so to speak. But no, it's actually just with other folks who can use the Force like he can, and then some. Shout out to our Godfather Rey gun. Gave us a thumbs up.
So, I'm gonna try to get you on here. If only just voice only. So give me 1 minute while we're doing that. My thoughts about season two are, oh my gosh, so many surprises, so many just love letter to Star Wars, and not just the movies, but the comics and the video games and the books and both old and new, everything in this season was just a love letter to Star Wars fans. And I cannot imagine a greater way to do the season than that. It's just, but they did it organically. They didn't force it.
They didn't force it.
They didn't, hold on, I'm trying to get Ray on here. Hold on.
There we are.
There you are. I think we're gonna just have your audio there, Ray.
From the Nether Realms.
From the Nether Realms.
Yep.
So, okay, real quick, since you're on here, Ray, what did you think about season one of The Mandalorian?
Well, first off, I would like to say that there really has to be a name change in the show.
Yeah.
It should be The Adventures of Grogu and the guy in the
You're not far off the mark. I think a lot of people can agree with you on that one for sure.
Yes. All right, so my feelings on this, because I can't stand very long, but I appreciate you guys letting me jump in real quick.
Yeah.
I have to say, a lot of people are feeling this whole thing about fan service, this, that, and the other thing, but I think that Favreau and Filoni are nailing it. Mm-hmm. They are really what Star Wars has needed for a very long time, and that is, let's get back to Star Wars and not just the story of Skywalker and the things we know. And that's really what makes this entire show so fun, is it really takes you back to what Star Wars really was before, you know, prequels and sequels and everything else. And I really like the direction they've gone in. I love the series. I love the ending. I'm not sure where Mando can go at this point. Maybe they continue his story. But if they don't right now, it's okay, because it feels like a satisfying ending. And if the rest of it is like this, it's a home run. So that is my opinion.
I did hear that Pedro Pascal say something about that yeah, season three is a go. They're just they're kind of pacing things out with all the other shows that they've announced and whatnot. But it is going to – we will see it.
Yeah, and they already announced that we thought – well, for a while, a lot of us thought that the Book of Boba Fett was going to be like season three. But they announced they made sure that – they announced today that the Book of Boba Fett is going to be its own separate series. So that's going to be awesome.
Right, and it's interesting how they've brought back Boba Fett. And you see him, this older, weathered, and then all of a sudden, he gets that outfit back, and he's Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt, you know. And, you know, with his partner by his side, this is going to be a very interesting story. Now, what I do hope is that they touch base on what happened with the Sarlacc pit. How did he get out? Now, obviously, he's got some scars.
Right.
So things have happened, you know. Yep. So it'll be interesting to see how things go. And it's – I don't want to go into spoilers, but just suffice it to say that whoever shows up at the end of the show isn't mad to see Boba Fett. Yeah, that's a thing. So but like I said, I think this is the best Star Wars we've gotten since Star Wars. I mean, it really, you know.
And that's a huge endorsement from you, Ray.
And, you know,
yep.
What's that?
That's a huge endorsement from you, Ray.
Well, absolutely. Well, it's funny, there was a meme on Facebook that really summed it up, that, you know, what's his name? He creates this movie Elf, which becomes a Christmas classic. He then jumps in and does Iron Man, and that starts the MCU. And now he's doing Star Wars, you know. As you can tell, this man loves Star Wars.
Oh yeah,
you know, he liked Iron Man. He loved Star Wars, and he's all about it.
And
so
he teamed up.
For my money, it's a shame he didn't start it.
Right, and he teamed up with Dave Filoni, who I feel is the apprentice to George Lucas.
Yeah.
Because he learned under George Lucas.
Absolutely.
And if there's a guy who knows about Star Wars and the way that George Lucas wants to do Star Wars, that Dave Filoni is the guy.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't really have
ask
for the best kind of collaboration, but those two.
Oh yeah,
especially with the way the show has been
done. Now, the one thing that gets me is how good Mandalorian is, and the worlds it took us to in two very short seasons, and Disney creates this entire world basically based on the sequel trilogy that just came out. Imagine if they had done that as, you know, in the Mandalorian's part of the world, and how different that would be.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I had not ridden Rise of the Resistance yet or anything else. I've walked through the area. It's very nice. There's nothing wrong with it. But imagine, even if they had Mando walking around, or you could see Baby Yoda, or Grogu. Grogu. I love that name.
Yeah, I mean,
that name, that is a vampire name if I've ever heard one. That is a vampire name. I am Count Grogu. Yes.
Yeah,
he's
going to,
I don't know, that name, he's
like
got to turn to the dark side,
guy.
I think.
Yeah. What were you saying, Danny?
Yeah.
When I first heard the name, I thought it was like, it reminded me more of like a Lord of the Rings type character.
Yeah.
Which again, isn't a surprise, given that Dave Filoni is also a Lord of the Rings character.
Oh, yes.
So,
oh, yes. And some people say that Grogu is kind of a homage to George Lucas himself. I mean, he could be.
Interesting.
So, who knows? But I feel like season one was great introduction to introduce these to the characters, and then season two was very much, okay, we've introduced the characters, now let's open the floodgates and really have fun with this. I think Dave Filoni is following the same formula that he did with both Clone Wars and Rebels, kind of having that first season giving time for people to get used to the characters, and then season two and then beyond, we're just opening the floodgates and just doing anything and everything we can. But yeah, so you enjoyed season two, I take it, Ray?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Here's my only sour note on the whole thing.
Okay.
Bring back IG-11. Gosh darn it.
If only, though, you know.
Bring him back. I'm excited for Boba. I'm excited for Obi-Wan. Bring it. That's what I say. Bring it.
All right.
And bring it to Disney Plus so we can all watch it and have fun with it. All right. Well, Lynn, I've got to go. I've got arcade things to do.
Okay.
So it was an honor and privilege, gentlemen, as usual.
Yeah.
And I will catch you on the flip-flop.
Okay.
Keep on playing like it's 1981, gentlemen.
All right.
See you, Ray.
See you, Ray.
Not a problem. I'll talk at you later.
Bye.
All right.
I don't know if I finished with season two for myself, but I really loved it. I wasn't sure after the second episode of The Mandalorian. We'll get into that in a minute, but I wasn't sure after the second episode, but I'm very happy with what we got, and I feel it was a very strong overall story that took what we had with season one and made it even better in season two, and then took elements from other Star Wars media and brought it into the series in not a "hey, look what we can do" kind of way, in a very organic and very very loving way. I am so happy what we got with season two. So now that we've kind of given our overall thoughts on The Mandalorian itself and season two, let's jump into each episode. Episode by episode, okay?
Okay. All right.
So we'll start off with Chapter 9, The Marshal. Let me do a quick for those of you who don't remember or haven't seen it in a while. The Marshal starts off, the Mando goes to Tatooine again. He is trying to find Mandalorians, who he heard was on Tatooine. He's trying to see where they're, and he leads to a man named Cobb Vanth, who has Boba Fett's armor. Cobb Vanth has a problem because a crate dragon is attacking his city, and so he tasks Mando to kill the crate dragon, and he'll give him the armor. So, okay, let's now jump into your thoughts, Danny.
Okay, well, for me, it was a good way to start things off, and I admit, when I first saw that armor show up, I'm like, wait a minute, what? Because I really thought it was him at first, only at first. But then when I saw the way he moved and whatnot, I'm like, oh, wait a second. It's not Boba Fett. It's not him. It's somebody else wearing the suit. And of course, and then that whole story, how they got into it. And I have to admit, one of the little details that I liked was how they were able to communicate with the Tusken Raiders, or specifically how Mando was able to sort of not just communicate with the Tusken Raiders, or Sand People, as they're called, but also kind of serve as a bit of a go-between between the villagers and the Tuskens. Because, well, let's face it, up to this point, when you think of Tusken Raiders, you think of just, Clegg Lars told Anakin in Episode 2, you know, just mindless savages, you know, that's what we all thought. But the way the episode was done really kind of showed, no, I mean, granted, yes, they can be savage and they can be brutal, but they're not completely mindless, you know, and they do have some degree of intelligence, and as it's revealed, they are willing to kind of, you know, they are willing to work toward a common goal,
and
they are people of their word.
Right.
You know, as savage as they are, they do keep their word on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole process was really good. And I really liked how, it was just funny because it's kind of a nice little, I don't know if you can call it a reverse, but it's kind of interesting how Mando's able to do that. Yet we know in season one, well, when certain scavengers were junking his ship, well, Well, we all kind of know how that went down at first.
Uh-huh.
But in the end, that worked out too.
Now, what did you not like about the episode?
I guess if I could pick one thing, because again, it's one of those things where you kind of have to look back at the episode again just to really get a sense of, okay, what were things that kind of stood out in a not so good way. I can't really think too much of anything at the moment, don't be surprised if I do end up realizing something like close to the end of the show. Honestly, I can't really think of anything.
Okay.
I really can't. But again, it's a nice way to kind of introduce us to a new character, Cobb Vanth, and you know what he's been doing and things like that. And a nice little, also, another thing I liked too was a nice little nod to episode 6, namely when the Death Star 2 got blown up. So that was pretty nice. And how that tied into the planet that they were on. And speaking of which, yes, we do go back to Tatooine in the first episode of the season, but only to a different spot, because it's not Mos Espa, which like we were in the prequels, and it wasn't Mos Eisley, like we were in the classic trilogy. It's actually in a different section of Tatooine, and one that's kind of like not really known, but still, I mean, it's a place that's still, you know, kind of on people trying to get by, you know, the best way they can, and really just how that whole thing worked. And also, for the first time, we get a chance to see what an actual Krayt Dragon was like, or at least in official canon, you know, not counting, you know, other places like Legends and what have you, because I think the only thing we saw via a Krayt Dragon was, I think, the skeleton, because I think it was one of the classic films we
and,
had seen.
Yeah, and A New Hope, in one of the very first scenes, yeah.
Yeah, so there was that. But other than that, we didn't really see anything else or actually see one.
Right.
And the way they did it was, it wasn't an automatic introduction, or rather it wasn't like they didn't introduce you to the creature right away. You only saw like maybe a little bit of it. And it's a nice little nod to the original Jaws, of course, to where, again, you don't really see it, but because the less you see, the more terrified you are.
Oh, yeah.
And that worked all the way through up until you got to the end when, you finally see just what a Krayt Dragon really looks like. And just, these things are dangerous. You do not want to trifle with them.
Right. No, I totally agree. As for my opinions, I love the Marshall for several different reasons. First of all, I am a huge Star Wars book reader. I have kept up with the books since The Force Awakens. I have read pretty much every single book that has been released. Not all of them, but a vast majority of them since they released. And Cobb Vanth, who was introduced in the book Aftermath, the Aftermath trilogy, jumping from book to live action in the series, was really, really big for me. Especially since I've been reading Star Wars books since I was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
And to see a book character make the jump to live action series, just, I don't know, it meant a lot to me. Like, a lot to me, to see that happen. And even though that Cobb Vanth is a minor character, I don't know if any of you have read the Aftermath trilogies, it's a really good read, but every so often they'll go on these little tangents, little side stories, and you get to see, like, other parts of the galaxy besides, you know, what we're talking about. And the Cobb Vanth story was one of those side stories. On top of that, the story that they had in The Mandalorian was very close to what they had in the books. There's just a few minor tweaks here and there, but for the most part, it was the same thing. So for them to do that...
I'm actually looking it up right now, and it's wow. Because again, I sadly have not read the Aftermath books, but I've heard bits and pieces, but yeah.
It's really good. It was a really good setup for The Force Awakens, I feel. It kind of gave you the time frame after Return of the Jedi. So the Aftermath trilogy happened right after Return of the Jedi, and it ends the Battle of Jakku, which was the final battle that the Rebel Alliance and the Empire fought officially. I mean, obviously, 5 years after, you know, I don't know how many years between the Aftermath trilogy and Mando. Obviously, even years after that has already happened, there's still a little bit of fighting going on. Some little holdouts still left. But for the most part, seeing that in the series just means a lot to me personally, because he's the first book character to ever do that. It's kind of how Saw Gerrera was kind of the first animated character to make a jump to the live action.
Yeah, that's right.
So it just meant a whole lot to me as a Star Wars reader to see that character jump into live action. As this the episode, I love the episode. I thought it was great beginning to season two. It was the longest episode, almost an hour long. And I know a lot of people complain about these side stories, but as long as the episode is entertaining, I don't care. I'm being a guy who watched anime a lot, this is nothing. You know, the way that the Mandalorian is set up, it's very anime-esque.
Yeah.
Where you have a lot of side stories, and then with that may interwave with the main plot, but may not. It may just be some one-off thing. I don't mind that, and especially for the first episode of season two, I thought it was a great jumping on point. You know, it was a great, okay, let's, I felt, especially now that we have the whole season now, I felt it was like good, like, all right, we're going to have fun this season. You know, we're going to, you know, we're just going to have a lot of fun. So that's my thing. Now, as for things I didn't like about it, I didn't like that they changed Cobb Vanth's story. Like I said, there's only minor changes to it. But it's a little confusing if you read the books now. But it's really not that big of a deal. It really isn't. But that's just nitpicky. I thought that they did Cobb Vanth very well. I feel like getting his story in there at any way possible is fine with me. So, but then it kind of got us ready for what's to come later in later episodes. And we'll talk about those when we get there. It kind of eased us into what this season is going to be about. And it showed that the creators of the show love the Star Wars history. And not just the movies, but the books and the comics and the video games. And again, we'll talk about that more as we get through the other episodes. So let's move on. And again, chat, if you guys have any things you want to say about any of the things we talk about, feel free to write your opinions in the chat and we'll talk about them. And like I said, we're recording this right now, so anything that we say here in our discussion will be in our podcast a little later on. So let's move on to Chapter 10, The Passenger. Now, the description for this is that before leaving Tatooine, Mando is ambushed. And the baby is almost kidnapped. However, he gets away with the child. He has to slog back to his ship. He needs to find his next move, but he doesn't know where to go from here. He goes to, I can't remember her name now, the lady that's at the docking bay. It's okay. That's all right. Chad, if you remember her name, let me know. But anyways... she goes back to him. He goes back to her, asks if she knows anything, and she finds out that she has somebody who's looking for passage to her home planet. She also would know where some other Mandalorians are. So we meet Frog Lady, who has no official name yet, who wants to transport her eggs to her home planet. However, they can't use light speed. They have to go the slow way. So, some things happen. Mainly, the New Republic gets involved. They get shot down on this icy planet and then have to survive and get back out so they can deliver this Frog Lady and find these other Mandalorians. Okay, that's as great as best Reader's Digest version that I can give it. Danny.
Well, pretty good.
Yeah. Danny, what did you think?
Well, this is where even I have to admit things kind of started to slow down just a little bit more than I would have liked. But on the one hand, looking how it plays a part in the overall story, I think you kind of had to have an episode like this. Because it does go somewhere. It's not just something that's just there for the sake of being, you know, filler. Because I don't think you can really call any of these episodes filler, let alone this one. So, but I have to admit, I can't really... It's actually not too bad of an episode. I mean, would I watch it multiple times? Not so much. But it does help advance things further along a little bit, even though when you look at it at the first glance, you wonder, okay, why is Mando doing this again? But then when you start to kind of look at it further, you realize, no, this does play a part in how things turn out. Now, I have to admit, I mean, the very funny part, this is something that I know a lot of audiences can agree on, is that the interesting, but maybe not so too hilarious part was the kid, Baby Yoda, basically reaching in, and you think, the way he's looking at the eggs, you'd think, oh, that looks cute, he's probably fascinated by them. Until you get to the scene where he's basically snacking on them as though they're like those deviled egg snacks that you find in salads, because seriously, good. And you thought Baby Yoda only had an appetite for frogs. No, this kid's basically got a bottomless pit for a stomach, I'm telling you.
Yeah, so the passenger. I know a lot of people, this was not their favorite episode of this season, and I'm not going to lie, if you told me to list the episodes that I like, I would probably put this at the on the bottom. However, I did not hate this episode because for several different reasons. First of all, I love the humor in this episode.
Yeah.
Second of all, I like that unlike most sci-fi movies, Mando didn't know what the frog lady was saying.
No.
I like that. That was so cool, and it was a first for Star Wars, because usually there's always a protocol droid there, or somebody knows the language, or something.
Or some kind of device that actually translates what they're saying, and like, oh, okay, this is what you're saying. Okay.
But it just makes it that much harder, and I thought that was really cool. Also, the director of this specific episode was also the director of Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah, so, Peyton Reed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you can see his Ant-Man-esque humor in this episode a lot. And I know a lot of people had problems with Baby Yoda eating the eggs. Honestly, I don't care.
Yeah. And plus, to be fair, they weren't fertilized.
No, they weren't fertilized.
So basically, it's no different than you and me basically having, you know, just
Right. Having
eggs for breakfast. Or anybody having eggs for breakfast.
Obviously, the frog lady did care about these eggs. However, I don't think she cared too much. She probably figured a few of them would probably die on the way. So, I don't know. I have no idea. It's a fiction story. I'm not going to worry too much about it.
Yeah. Don't take it so seriously. Plus, again, they weren't fertilized eggs.
Yeah. So,
no life was being lost.
Did the joke go on a little too long? Probably. But, you know, as for, it doesn't really bother me at all. So let's talk about the spiders.
Yeah.
So first of all, these spiders.
Creepy, man.
First of all, they were designed after a rejected Ralph McQuarrie drawing. These spiders were actually supposed to be on Dagobah, which Star Wars is all about echoes. These similar designs were used in Star Wars Rebels for the spiders in there. We don't know if this is like a different breed. We don't know if this was a different breed of spider or whatever, but it's really cool to know that they're reusing a lot of the different concept. And that's what I loved about Clone Wars and Rebels was they went back and used a lot of concept art from Ralph McQuarrie, from Episode One, from all the movies that they didn't use. They use these characters, like, for example, Zeb in Star Wars Rebels was actually a rejected design for Chewbacca.
Really? I thought it was Han Solo.
Han Solo, Chewbacca.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Well, still, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So to know that they are using, my point is, to know that they're using all of this stuff, it's really cool. And to take a lot of the things that they didn't use and then use it and then make it really cool is really awesome, and I'm glad to see it. Also, I like the little nod to Aliens as the egg kind of, oh no, I hope that's not a facehugger.
someone, as I'm sure you've seen this, and I know a lot of folks have seen this, but for those who haven't, someone had done a fan art of basically Baby Yoda snacking on a face hugger. Don't worry.
And he'd do it too. And he'd do it too.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think that's he'd probably be the one creature that I don't think any of those xenomorphs would want to even be near. Like, okay, right. No, this guy eats us. We gotta get away from him.
Yeah.
He's not a little kid. He'll eat us. But yeah.
Yeah.
But I did like that fan art. It was pretty hilarious. But yeah.
Oh
boy.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah. Just
but also to the New Republic. You know, for all the trash talk that the New Republic has had in the last couple episodes, you know, in season one, and, you know, how badly we've heard the New Republic did things. I mean, first of all, the New Republic reigned for 30 years, which is much longer than the Empire. Take that as you will.
Yeah, I can kind of see the argument where some folks are coming from, because they feel like, you know, oh, well, as it was hinted at in Force Awakens, you know, it was back to business as usual.
Right.
But again, we could go into a whole other thing right there.
Right.
But still, to see
the representation of the New Republic in the two X-Wing pilots who, you know, come in and you think they're going to arrest Mando, and then, you know, they know that he helped save that one dude's life, and then at the same time, he arrested all of his crew that tried to break in. It's kind of neat to see that payoff, especially an episode in season one I feel like doesn't get a lot of love either. You know, that payoff was also quite entertaining and quite cool. Oh man, I loved it so much. It was really cool. So
yeah,
but
and I do like how those pilots kind of work also as sort of like, you know, little wink at the audience cameos.
Yes.
It's like, so you had a few people, again, if you recognize the faces, if not the voices, then you know who they are. You know, like almost like a Stan Lee type thing.
Right.
But in a good way, though.
Yeah. All right. So, do we have anything else to talk about the passenger?
No, just that, yeah, definitely added a little bit of some horror elements at the end.
Yes. Those things were creepy.
Yeah, and it's like, if you blast away a few, guess what? They're gonna come at you even harder.
Right.
They're just gonna swarm you. We're like, ah, run!
Yeah.
Run!
Alright, so chapter 11 is the Eris. After a very rough landing on Frog Lady's home planet, Mando finds out about the other Mandalorians who he charters a boat. The boat's a trap to try to get Mando's Beskar armor. And he's saved by a bunch of Mandalorians, including one, for all of you Clone Wars fans out there.
Yep.
Bo-Katan Kryze, who saves the day. She asks Mando to help her hijack a Imperial transport.
Full of
weapons and stuff. So Mando does. We get a really good action sequence. We get to have our first ever name drop of a very, very popular character.
Oh, yeah.
So, Danny, what did you think of this episode?
Well, first off, like I said, I'm glad that the previous episode was leading to this, and boy, did it deliver.
Yeah.
For anyone who thought that the previous episode was kind of like a little bit slow and going, well, this one kind of ratchets it back up to where it should be, and then some. Because, again, not only do we get the appearance of yet another character making the transition from animation to live action, or rather from a different source into an actual visual medium,
mm-hmm.
but we also get, essentially, a name drop of another fan favorite, whom we will meet later on, hopefully. But first off, the Mandalorians who save Mando's life, holy moly, I wasn't expecting it. I thought it was just going to be some random people. But nope, it turned out to be pretty much who I believe they're called the Night Owls, I think they're called. Sorry, so whenever I hear that name, I think of Court of Owls from DC. But yeah, again, no connection between those two different groups. But it wasn't until I saw actually the lead person take off their helmet that all of a sudden, yeah, because again, I do have a lot of catching up to do on my end in regards to Clone Wars, but I am familiar with the character. And just, who is this character you're talking about? Well, basically it's none other than Bo-Katan Kryze, or Bo-Katan, depending on how you want to pronounce it. But it isn't just the character herself. No, they actually got the actress herself who plays the character in Clone Wars and in Rebels to actually be able to come in to a live action thing, which I'm really glad they were able to do, because the beauty about animation work, and again, not to deviate too much from what we're talking about, most actors like to do animation work because, again, it's something that you would never be able to do in live action. But to give credit to Katie Sackhoff, you know, she basically looks enough like the character to where she's able to become that, and not just in voiceover form, or rather, not just in animated form, I should say. And boy, did it work. I mean, it was a seamless transition to where you didn't even need to look at the character too much to know, yes, that is Bo-Katan.
Mm-hmm. No, I
and
agree.
With that, yeah, and with that, though, you also get a little bit of a, I wouldn't say it's a shock to Mando's system in terms of his core beliefs and what he was raised on. It looks as if, though, there's different sections of Mandalore, or rather Mandalorian culture, that not everybody seems to be on the same page about. And it turns out that in Mando's case, let's just say he was raised, he was found by a different section of Mandalorians that aren't exactly the same as the ones that trained and brought up Bo-Katan.
Oh, yeah.
So do you want to give the name drop, or do you want me to?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Yeah, basically, as she reveals to Mando, basically he was found by the Watch. He is a child of the Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I first heard that, I'm thinking, oh, wait, is she talking about Death Watch? Because that's the only Watch that I know of. Unless, of course, there's other Watch set that we don't know about that have the name Watch in their title. But basically, yeah, I mean, just getting a chance to see that and just the different, I guess, clearly Mando or Din and Bo-Katan have very, very different ideologies over what they think a Mandalorian should be. So, but yeah, but in all, though, he obviously agrees to help them, you know, grudgingly, for the most part. But he says, okay, fine. But one thing that really stood out to me, though, was when Bo-Katan looked at Baby Yoda. And that really got me wondering, because even I know that she had to have had, given that Bo-Katan did have some interactions with the Jedi during the Clone Wars, obviously, it does beg the question as to whether or not she's aware of who that kid is, or specifically who and what Mando has obviously hanging around him, because obviously he's not carrying the kid around for luck. But still, other than that, though, it worked out pretty good. It was an awesome, really action-packed episode. And then at the very end, when she name drops a certain character's name, and it's none other than Ahsoka Tano, wow. I mean, again, it's one, just when you think that the showrunners can't surprise you, they're able to keep doing that, mm-hmm. which is not exactly the easiest thing to do if you're a producer or a writer on a show, but they're able to keep at it, and holy moly, they are just hitting it out of the park, just
yes.
again and again.
Yeah, no,
and it really
I agree.
Got me wondering, okay, what's Ahsoka going to look like? Because I know that there have been a lot of different discussions from fans leading up to this. And again, you know, there's always such things as fan castings and so forth, but usually they don't really turn out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, up until now. But I guess we'll find out soon enough. But yeah, it all, fantastic episode, action-packed, great transition from, again, one character from another medium into live action, and just terrific stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I really like this episode. It was very action-packed. I love seeing more Mandalorians this time. Mandalorians in different armor, but also seeing Bo-Katan was really cool. And also, like you said, seeing her cast as the voice actress from The Clone Wars was also great on top of that. Knowing her history and I remember the first time when they, you know, Mando met up with Bo-Katan and her crew, them taking off their helmets, and I was like, ooh, Mando's not gonna like that.
No.
You know, because we're, you know, those of us who watched Clone Wars and Rebels, we're used to Mandalorians taking their helmets off. We just thought that was a thing, and through the first season, I thought it was really weird that Din, you know, didn't take his helmet off, and I was weirded. I was like, oh, is that going to be like a retcon or anything? But no, again, they seamlessly waved it into the story, and I thought that was really, really cool and really interesting. And then seeing, of course, her, and not only just her there, but her fighting and her, it's the same character. It's the absolute same character. And I know that a lot of fanboys are like, oh, she's too young and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah. And plus, also, to be fair, though, I mean, given that she was, because my understanding is that she is the younger sister of the now late you know, Satine Kryze, I think it stands to reason that, unlike Obi-Wan, whom, as we, which again, it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, well, wait a minute, how come Obi-Wan, by the time we get to A New Hope, the guy looks like he's already, like, an old man, whereas Bo-Katan doesn't look like she's aged a day. The only thing I can think of is that, look, maybe she was a teenager, because I don't think, because my understanding, she was just a few years older than Ahsoka, or so, so the story goes. But still.
I think she was a little older than that, but...
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's the character. It's the character, and that's all we care about.
Yeah.
And she's there to kick butt and take names, and boy, did she.
And then when she name-dropped Ahsoka, I could not believe that that was happening. And I remember, does that mean Ahsoka's coming in? Now, let me just say, before this, we heard so many rumors about Ahsoka being in the series and, you know, about who was going to play her and all this stuff. And a lot of times I take all that with a grain of salt because who knows what's going to happen? You know, who knows where they got this information? But to its credit, I got really excited because that means we could possibly see Ahsoka in live action. And I thought that was a great ending to the series. But also, seeing different Mandalorians with, like, different cultures, that's also kind of cool. I really enjoyed that one as well. Again, the action was great. The, you know, it just was a great overall show. You know, I like the other characters, even though they didn't really play much of a part. I like the fact that that Din left Baby Yoda with the frog lady.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty interesting because it's like, although you do realize this kid nearly tried to eat a few of your eggs. You know, I'm surprised that he would do that. But, you know, Mando pretty much put on his Papa Bear hat, whether he knew it or not, and pretty much made it clear, hey, don't behave.
But
and in the end, you know, it turned out it worked out pretty good. You know, the kid didn't eat any more eggs, and it just he actually learned to be like, oh, this is pretty nice.
Yeah.
So,
Dearest, really great episode. Let's move on. Next episode is Chapter 12, The Siege. And so this is about the Mando, the child. Apparently, they thought they got the Razor Crest fixed, and so they move on to where they have to go next, but unfortunately they can't make it, so they have to land at an old stomping ground, Navarro, for repairs. We see the old crew from Season 1, and then, you'll have to remind me what his name is.
Carl Weathers' character?
Yes.
Greef Karga.
Greef, that's right. Greef Karga. So Greef tells him about an old Imperial station that's there, and he wants to get rid of the Imperials for good. Din, of course, okay, sure, why not? So we get another little side quest, and I know a lot of people were complaining so much about these side quests, and I just enjoyed the ride. Okay, so they go off to this Imperial holdout. They have Fish Guy with them. And, you know, we find out a lot about this Imperial hangout that answered some questions, but also left us with more questions.
Yes.
A lot more questions that have yet to be answered. So.
Yeah, still. My gosh.
Yeah, so let's talk about the siege. What did you like about it? What did you not like about it, Danny? All
right, so. Going into what I liked about it, first off, it was great seeing some old faces, you know, Greef Karga and Cara Dune. Any scene that Mando has with them, you know it's going to be something really great. And again, credit to both Carl Weathers and Gina Carano's performances, because they really are able to sell you on who these characters are. Gina Carano with her, again, because of her MMA background, she's able to bring the sort of physicality to her role. So they both each carry, their performances are able to give status to their characters, and you really get a vibe from them, which really helps translate into what you see. And it's something that Mando is able to kind of, you know, really work with, or rather, it's something that Pedro Pascal and his stunt doubles are able to work with when they're in those scenes. And so seeing them again was great, and seeing that obviously, you know, Navarro has basically, you know, gotten a little bit better. Or at least a little bit better from what it was last season. So, but even then, not all is not well in the Land of Oz, or Land of Navarro, so to speak, because it turns out, you know, with that whole Imperial holdout. But luckily, and also, speaking of which, of characters returning, we pretty much end up running into our infamous blue guy that we met in the first episode of season one. And it turns out he's been put to work, him being his usual, you know, self, whatnot. But he does manage to play a hand in helping out. And of course, what I really liked, and it's a nice little real world, but a little real world thing that they did, but it wasn't so real world that it took you out of it. And it was when Mando dropped Baby Yoda off at the little school.
Yes.
So that was a nice little touch.
That was the first time I think we've seen a school in Star Wars. No, that's wrong. Because we saw the Imperial.
I don't think there was any.
We saw the Imperial Academy in Rebels.
Rebels, yeah. But I don't think they've done anything like that in the movies, though.
We saw the clones getting educated in Attack of the Clones. I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We've never seen a traditional Earth school. How's that?
Yeah.
We've never seen a traditional Earth school.
Yeah, or the closest thing to any. To like that in the Star Wars galaxy. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's true.
So that was kind of cool to see, like, an actual school in Star Wars. So, yeah.
And with all the usual stuff that you'd expect, you know, to find in an elementary school.
Yeah.
I mean, good grief. And once again, Yoda has now developed a sweet tooth by the looks of things, because it looks like those cookies, or I guess the Star Wars equivalent of macaroons, he has a soft spot for now.
And, well, he has a soft spot for any food. He's a black hole of food.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that Earth does not exist, that the Milky Way galaxy does not exist, or that it's not next door to the Star Wars galaxy, because imagine Baby Yoda being introduced to Earth food. My gosh. Yeah, it's like, forget Big Macs and Whopper Juniors and you know, DQ Blizzards. He'd scarf them all down, and he'd still be like, I want more. Can I have one, please? But anyway, but just that little scene between Baby Yoda and this other student, and again, it's very, very similar to what I remember in elementary school, what you remember, you know, and just like, come on, man, can I at least have some cookies? No. Fine.
And he uses the Force.
Force grab. Hey, I
asked mine nicely, now.
You know, that sort of vibe, and that was really cool.
Yeah.
And just, again, the action was great, and just finding out some interesting things, and Mando maybe probably wondering that maybe he should have not let a certain scientist go,
right?
Or at least walking on 2 feet anyway. And just a few little pieces to the puzzle in regards to where does the kid figure into this whole thing, and why was the Empire so adamant about getting him?
And let's not go too much into like theories or whatever, but how surprised were you when you saw that unfold in that episode?
Honestly, it was very surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, considering that there's still a lot of mystery regarding Baby Yoda, we really it were some questions that we kind of needed some answers to. But again, it only left us with more questions. Like, okay, what's going on here? Because obviously, there's a bigger story afoot here, or there's a bigger thing going on. But we don't. But Mando has no idea what it is.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And it's one of those things where obviously he knows he has to keep the kid safe. He has to find a Jedi or somebody of this kid's race to keep him safe, because, and hopefully keep the Empire away from him somehow.
Right.
So it was definitely like a little bit of a race against the clock.
Okay.
Another thing too, and I wish we, and I didn't mention this before, but one thing I really like about the series, about the show, is that you really get a chance to see the Empire really be a little bit more intimidating. Like, even characters and vehicles that you would think are nothing but cannon fodder, nope, these things can be very, very, you know, imposing. Mm-hmm. Even if you have the proper tools. And we know that Mando, you know, again, he's pretty much got the right stuff. But even then, he still has his hands full. So yeah, go ahead.
I like seeing the troop transport again in this episode. I didn't grow up with, you know, a lot of the classic, you know, Star Wars line. And a lot of those classic toys that a lot of the, I would say, first generation Star Wars fans got to see. But to, again, see this in live action, again, I've seen this in Rebels, so it wasn't as a, it was kind of a cool thing to see it in the first season. And the second season, it was like, oh, cool, they're bringing it back. But you know that they have a big heart for this stuff. And, It's really kind of cool to see. But overall, I liked the episode. I thought it was good. Yeah, another side trip, but who cares? We get to see our crew from the first season, and then introduce Fish Guy. A little bit more, get to see a little bit more of his personality. But we also get to, again, open up another mystery about what the Empire wants with Grogu. Does this connect with other things? We don't know yet. I mean, like I said, we still don't know a lot of the questions that this episode brings forth. So who knows where this is going to connect to. But overall, I like the episode. I love the chase, and I love the fight. The fights were really cool. I felt sorry for the extra that I accidentally got.
Some things just can't be avoided. No matter
well,
what
I mean, they digitally took him out anyway, so, you know, yeah. Whatever. It's gone now, but I love the kind of jokes about, like, stormtroopers not, you know, missing, and there's no handrails, and I love all that. And then, of course, Mando's save at the end with the Razor Crest all fixed, and then to find out at the end that Moff Gideon has a mole and is tracking the Razor Crest was a really good ending to this. So, overall...
I can't really think of any cons for this one, because, again, good action-packed episode. Mm-hmm. Little nice, fun little moments, but it immediately takes you right back into what the episode's about.
Right. Okay, let's move on to the next episode. Let me get my notes here. So the next episode is The Jedi. So this is a big one.
Yeah.
So Mando and Grogu, who we didn't know at the time, that's what's his name, but Grogu fly to the planet that Bo-Katan told them to head to, and I please forgive me, I forgot in chat if you know.
I think it was Corvus, I think.
Corvus?
Yeah.
Okay. So fly to Corvus. They find out that a Jedi has been in this area. The Magistrate tasks Din to go out and kill the Jedi, which he has no intention of doing, even from the very beginning. He just wants to find this Jedi. We find this Jedi, and surprise, surprise, it's Ahsoka Tano. So, Danny, before we get into your overall thoughts, how was it seeing Ahsoka Tano in live action for you?
It was like seeing the character jump off the page.
Uh-huh.
And into live and into the real world, but yet, at the same token, nothing about it feels artificial. Nothing about it felt contrived. Nothing of the sort.
Mm.
Nothing. It just seamless transition. It's just like, yeah, that is it. It's Ahsoka.
Yeah,
it is Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even need to look at it twice or even too long to know that. Yeah, this is. It's there. You go. There's your fan. There's the fan favorite in the flesh.
And you liked Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka.
There could not have been a better actress to bring this character to life in live action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also one of those few moments, maybe one of those once in a blue moon moments, where fan casting was spot on and that they were right all along.
I don't know. I still miss, don't get me wrong, I think she was great too. And I'm not poo-pooing on you, but I do kind of wish that they got
Ashley
Eckstein to do Ahsoka, but I'm not sad they got somebody else to do her, and they got a really good actress to play her. She did a lot of research into the character, and she nailed it. She nailed Ahsoka. I really cannot wait to see, and we'll talk more about this later, but I cannot wait to see her in this series, that the spin-off series that they're going to do. So, all right, overall thoughts on the episode itself?
Again, this is another one of those things, one of those episodes where you could almost think that it's fan service, but it's fan service that goes hand in hand with the story and the characters and the development that they go through. And just perfect homage. And again, this is another one of those episodes that shows that the showrunners know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing what, and again, this is not meant to take a dig at J.J. Abrams or Rian Johnson. Goodness knows, they've already gotten enough flack from Star Wars audiences as it is. But it does need to be said that what really sets Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni apart from J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson is that they did not try to copy the movies that came before.
Mm-hmm.
What John and Dave did was they were able to take the very elements that inspired George to create Star Wars and incorporate that into the show. And that, in turn, is what really makes the whole thing work. Because, I mean, just the nods and homages to those old classic spaghetti westerns and even to those classic samurai movies by Kurosawa, it's all there. And it's not just, oh, put in there just as a little Easter egg. No, it's done with a purpose. It's done to help service the story.
And I will agree with you. I will say that the episode is a little slow, especially in the middle. I know it was on purpose, but it is a little slow. And I feel like a couple of the audiences could get bored with how slow it goes in the middle. Overall, the episode was really cool. Seeing Ahsoka in live action was great. You know, getting to learn Grogu's name was really cool. And the fact that they got to share. I think my overall favorite thing about this episode is that you could definitely tell that this is a Dave Filoni episode.
Hands down.
The way you can tell is the way that it was shot. There were so many scenes in just that episode alone that were like paintings. They were like somebody painted something. The silhouettes, the colors, everything was very much artistic.
And going with what you said, while I'm no artist, I mean, because again, goodness knows I can't draw to save my life, but the way it's done, I mean, just the art, I guess, what is it, the artistry or just that artistic feel that, and again, any artist worth their, again, you're an artist yourself, and just the way it's done, it feels exactly like, just like, again, out of like a Ralph McQuarrie type painting or like, you know, take your pick, but just artistically, it is so like artistically appealing that even if you can't help but pay attention. You take it all in. It's just.
And that's why I was glad they kind of slowed it down personally. But I know, like, the other side of me was like, okay, all right, let's go. Come on, let's get to the action here.
Which we'll get to that.
Oh, yeah. So, finding out Grogu's name, what was your reaction when you heard Grogu?
I thought, okay. All right. That's not too bad.
Exactly, same reaction.
Reminds me of a Lord of the Rings type character, but still, I mean, it works, you know.
No, I agree. It was definitely... I thought it was fine. I know some people have problems with it. Some people are like, oh, I'm just going to call him Baby Yoda. He's always been Baby Yoda. It's fine. I don't care. But for me, if you find out somebody's name, you're going to call him by their name.
Yep. The kid reacts to when you call him by his name. So it's like, oh, okay. More so than just saying, oh, kid.
Let's talk about the actual story. I love it because it was a kind of a mix of classic like samurai and spaghetti western. I love the fight between the magistrate and Ahsoka. That was amazing.
And just the way it cut back and forth between that and Mando and that other martial guy.
Right.
Boom. Again, did you recognize the actor?
No. Go ahead.
Maybe you didn't. Okay. Have you seen Terminator?
Yes.
Yeah. Mainly the first two, because it's Michael Biehn who played Kyle Reese, you know, aka John Connor's dad. But yep, that was him. And of course, he also played a character. I forget its name. It wasn't Deadwood. It was that Western film that they did in the 90s with Val Kilmer.
Tombstone.
Tombstone. Yes. He played a character there. The action was just the way it intercut. Again, those kinds of things really are great, especially when done properly.
And I love seeing Ahsoka and Din work together. I loved there was one moment in the scene that like I honestly was like, okay, this, you know, Rosario Dawson is Ahsoka, is the part where she slices the gong in half and then cuts down has this guy has a blaster on him. She cuts the blaster in half and then just like turns and give him this smile and he just runs off. I was like, that's Ahsoka. Because you can see she's got a little bit of her master's sass in her.
She is truly a true student of her sensei Anakin Skywalker to a
T.
And it's one of those things that make me almost wish that, because I'd like to think that an alternate timeline, and goodness knows, fanfics being what they are.
Right.
I know, I like to believe that there's a few where Ahsoka trains Luke and Leia.
Right.
You know, I mean, but anyway, she, again, nailed it, and just the her action scenes alone, not even counting her fight with the magistrate, but even before that, when she's taking out all these other guys, and it isn't just a simple thing of just her using her lightsabers. Like, every move, every attack she makes, even if it's not directly on them, it's done with a purpose. Like, when she's chopping down the tree, boom, guy gets pancakes.
She's definitely
real quick.
She's definitely her master's student.
Yep.
Because I saw a lot of her moves, a lot of the things she did. It was like, yeah, that's Anakin. She's got some of Anakin's moves.
And of course, the fight with the magistrate, going to that, and the way it was done.
No dialogue,
no score.
Yeah, nothing.
But just sound design.
Yeah,
and also the way she draws her lightsabers. Mm-hmm. And again, go back to Rebels, and Dawson took her notes.
Yeah,
she really paid attention, and I like that.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the tragedy. Side note.
Oh, boy.
Chapter 14, the tragedy. After the tragedy came out, there was, I don't know if anyone listens to the Blast Points podcast. Shout out to the Blast Points podcast, by the way. But they took a few scenes from that episode and undercut it with the song Tragedy from the Bee Gees.
Song, but now I want to check it out. I don't know if I'm going to end up being emotionally devastated. That scene had me going, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
No.
So okay. So Ahsoka points Din to his next location, which is a planet. Which between when these two episodes came out, there was a lot of speculation what this planet was. Apparently, this was in the Legends timeline. It was like one of the first home planets of the Jedi. So that's a cool shout out to that. I didn't think they would go right to it. I thought there was going to be another little side trip, but no, they went right to it. This was also the shortest episode. However, even though it was the shortest episode of all the episodes this season, it had so much packed into that short episode. On top of that, Robert Rodriguez directs this episode. Spy Kids and Sin City and Alita Battle Angel and all that stuff. The fights had his handprints on it, man.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this. They land on the planet where Ahsoka told them to go to. Din has to take Grogu to this meditation spot, where he has to sit on this stone and kind of meditate to try to communicate with other Jedi. And along the way, lo and behold, somebody's starship shows up. Who is in this starship? Mr. Danny the Ultrasonic Player.
All right, cue the drum roll, please. It is none other than Boba Fett.
Yes,
now,
Boba Fett.
Here's the thing. We actually spotted him at the end of the first episode of season one, and we were wondering... What in the world?
Yeah.
Like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
But clearly, when he got out of there, you can tell, yes, he did get out of the Sarlacc pit, but he didn't get out of there unscathed.
Right. And with Fennec Shand in tow, from the first season. So that was him and with those boots, which everyone was thinking that was probably him because of those spur noises that that they made. Which, if you go back to Empire Strikes Back, Boba Fett has those spur noises every time he walks around. So you might want to go back.
Out again.
Yeah, you have to watch that again. So anyways, and then not too long after Boba Fett lands, do we get another surprise guest? Stormtroopers decide to descend to try to get Grogu. And of course, our very good friend Moff Gideon has come to take the child away. So... And again, spoilers for those of you who haven't seen it yet, but Grogu gets captured and taken away. That is, and then, of course, RIP to the Razor Crest. So let's talk about this episode. What did you like and didn't like about this episode? Go.
Okay, Well, first off, to get the cons out of the way, I can't really think of anything else. I mean, it's really hard to kind of find cons in these final episodes because everything is just really tightly packed. And with this one, I mean, holy smoke. I mean, granted, yes, was it a short episode? Obviously it was, but because of how it was done, it doesn't feel like a short episode.
Right.
I mean, just first off, being taken to a planet that only those who had read Legends, who either were around to read those books back in the day, or maybe stumbled upon them, you're not going to know what this planet is. And of course, granted, I mean, everyone thought.
I didn't even know, and I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I've never even heard of the planet, so that was new to me.
Yeah, and my understanding of the planet Tython was a little bit different than what it was described, but again, they only landed on a part of the planet. They didn't get a chance to explore. And that was another thing that I kind of had thought that they were going to do. I thought that they were not going to get to the Seeing Stone just yet. I thought that they were going to touch down and just be like, okay, while we're on our way there, we'll just see the sights.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, they got right to it.
Nope.
Wasted no time. Now, I had been wondering, like a lot of people, like, if Boba Fett did survive, which we know he did, obviously, we did wonder, I wondered, especially, like, how would that encounter go? What would that confrontation be like? Well, basically, obviously, when we meet up with Boba, he obviously is exactly who you'd expect him to be. He hasn't changed one little bit, or has he? Because instead of actually just, you know, saying, you know, give me my armor or else, and Mando saying no, and just Boba Fett, you know, drawing his blaster and shooting him. No, he actually, you know, says, look, I got a sniper up there who's aiming at the kid and whatnot. And, you know, and of course, Mando's saying, you do that, you won't even get a chance. And then it turns out that, but Boba basically is able to de-escalate the whole thing, which is kind of shocking because, you know, if you've watched the classic trilogy or even the prequel era, namely Clone Wars, the character never really came across as somebody who would want to, you know, talk first, shoot later.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, and that's something that a lot of people have kind of discussed about. And I've listened to other podcasts like Rebel Force Radio. Shout out to Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack on there. But yeah, they talked about that. And it looks as if though that Boba may have had a chance to really think about stuff. But then again, you know, being in the Sarlacc, even if only for a while, you know, I guess you do get a chance to think about stuff, maybe, while you're trying to get out of there. But the fact that he was able to be like, look, I just want my dad's armor. You know, you hand it over to me, and in return, me and Fennec here will help protect the kid. And, you know, it was one of those things that at first Mando wasn't too keen on because he was like, well, look, you know, did you take the creed and all this stuff? And Boba says, no, I'm not. I mean, look, I'm just a guy trying to get by in this galaxy. That's it. You know, and again, I know I'm not saying it word for word, but again, that's basically the gist of what Boba's telling him. And so, you know, before it can go any further, you know, our favorite bucketheads show up and, you know, it just turns into an all-out fight. And it's one of those things that make me wish that Mando had taken his blaster disruptor, or I think they call it Amban, you know, his sniper rifle with him before he got out of there, before he headed off to the Seeing Stone. But anyway, so they get into that, and but boy, you really get a chance to see Boba Fett. Not only does he get into the fight, he gets into the fight. And even though he doesn't have his armor at first, that doesn't mean he is helpless by any means. You give him a club, and he'll just basically start swatting away these guys,
man,
like they're nothing.
Oh, man, seeing somebody actually use a gaffy stick for the first time in Star Wars, like, well, I wouldn't say the first time, the second time in Star Wars, and seeing
and
how
connects.
Brutal that weapon is, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, Boba Fett is dangerous enough without his armor. You give him his armor, then that's a whole other level of awesomeness right there. But yeah, just that scene alone, you really get a chance. If you felt like Boba Fett was just some chump, because I never thought that about the character, but I know there were plenty of other people other audiences out there who did. But just with the scene alone, that notion starts to dispel very quickly,
right?
Because he's just single-handedly taking them all out and just laying them all out like it's nothing. And then, of course, we get to that scene, and it starts with him looking at Mando's ship, And then you don't see anything else after that except a crossfire. And then something gets thrown. Something gets thrown at those Buckethead stormtroopers. They get blasted away. And who should show up? Not with a superhero landing, but nevertheless, feet first on the ground and ready to kick some butt, but Boba Fett himself in his armor. Mm-hmm. And let's just say it is glorious. And looking at some of the reaction videos, which again, you have to see them to believe it, but
yeah,
it Boba Fett still lived up to the hype that he had back in the day.
Oh yeah, and more
he
so.
He may be older, but that doesn't mean anything.
Oh no, that doesn't mean a thing.
Knee rockets.
Oh yeah.
He has knee rockets.
Yeah, he has knee rockets, which apparently have been a thing since the beginning. Because they went back and they found a screenshot of Return of the Jedi and he has those knee rockets.
Wow. And just, again, fan service that isn't just tacked on for the sake of fan service, but service that helps service the story.
Oh, yes.
I like that.
So, I like the episode, too. It was, the thing I loved about it was focused. And yes, it was the shortest episode, but it was focused. It got right to the point. You did no fluff. Right to it. And it didn't stop for a moment. You know, it didn't stop to have you breathe for a moment. It just kept going and going and going and going and going. I like that about this episode. I really do. You know, I know that some people are like, how did Finnick survive? And whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Ming-Na Wen is an amazing actress. I'm glad she's in Star Wars. Having her character back was awesome. Of course, Boba Fett coming in with his armor, kicking butt, taking names. This was amazing. And I was so happy to witness it. But that wasn't the only surprise in this episode. Oh, no. We also get the Dark Troopers. For the first time.
Oh boy.
And let me tell you, I probably made the biggest fanboy squeal ever because I have been a huge fan of the Dark Forces video games. I have played all of those games since I was a kid. I remember sitting on my dad's computer playing Dark Forces, fighting against the Dark Troopers, but to see them in this series made me so happy, and all the fan theories that I have, and oh my gosh, I'm so happy, and I'm so glad that either Dave Filoni or Jon Favreau are Dark Forces lovers as well, because this is not the first time the Dark Troopers have appeared in Star Wars.
No,
so
not at all.
Because the first time they appeared was in Rebels. So now we get to see more of them. And oh my gosh, they were so cool. And of course, Grogu gets kidnapped and taken to Moff Gideon. You know, Moff Gideon kind of gloats a little bit. We get to see Grogu using his Force abilities to, like, mess with some stormtroopers like little puppets.
Yeah. I kind of got a vibe of, where's my dad?
Yeah.
That sort of vibe.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's move on because we're almost running on 2 hours here. So let's move it and groove it. Before we move on to these last two episodes, I want to throw in a huge, huge spoiler warning. Do not go past this point if you do not want these last episodes spoiled for you, because we are going over them right now. I mean, you had plenty of time to see every episode prior to what we're talking about right now. But these last episodes, you need to be caught up. So you have been warned.
Yep.
So here we go. We're going to start off with Chapter 15, The Believer. Din decides to go after one of his old crewmates. Cannot remember his name for the life of me.
During
the prisoner. But so they get him out of... Yeah, they get him out of jail. And they use his old Imperial connections to try to get a way to find Moff Gideon. While they're on this planet, Din and I forget his name. I really wish I could remember his name. The bald guy, the prisoner.
Oh, the prisoner that they go after?
Yeah. Look it up real quick. Do it.
Do it.
So I don't feel like a complete moron.
Yeah, the character's name is Mayfield.
Mayfield. Okay, so Mayfield and Din have to go to this Imperial base to try to get information of where Moff Gideon is on the way, they have to sneak into this transport, and that's transporting Rhydonium. And highly explosive chemical that then they get attacked by pirates. They make it there, but then Din has to actually access the computer himself. And so we get a very tense scene, and we get to really see this character Mayfield, who a lot of people did not like in The Prisoner. So really quickly, Danny, what did you like? What did you not like?
Well, you know what? Looking at this episode, I have to admit, at first, it kind of felt a little bit like there were maybe a few moments where maybe the pacing kind of went just a little bit off again. Not too much, but in looking at it again, it was a lot better on the second viewing. And of course, again, getting a chance to see Mayfield again, played by Bill Burr, and the sort of humor he brings to his performance. And just it really kind of helped. Not only did it help, like, kind of harken back to not only did we get a chance to see another character we saw from last season come back, but this time, unlike the first season, where he was pretty much like a pain in the neck and obviously a bit of a, you know, obviously he given what he tried to pull in season one, but to see him back, but this time with a bit of a different feel and a different vibe, and definitely someone to help, who ends up really becoming a big help to Mando in this one. It really is one of those episodes where you kind of have to watch it a second time around just to really get a full understanding of the thing. Oh, and of course, a shout out to Heather Worley Yard, who just joined us in the chat. So hello.
Hi, Heather.
So, again, to anybody who joins the chat, again, you're more, please chime in. Yeah, we're talking about Mandalorian season 2.
All right.
Currently on The Believer.
Right.
So, but I do like the little discussion and talking that Mando and Mayfield have at first, and because obviously Mando does not really want to like get into any discussion about, you know, ideologies and whatnot.
He doesn't do small talk. Din is not a small talker.
He is not. And even just that scene of him having to take off his armor completely and put on this Imperial, you know, outfit. And this gets, and I'm glad that this translates to when he, well, spoilers, has to take it off, when he has to take his helmet off. It's one of those things where he clearly feels out of place. He clearly feels like, just, like, naked, essentially, without his armor, because that is him. It's like, you know, so it isn't just a sense of, like, you know, like, oh, well, it's just a suit. No, to him, and again, as I said in season one, the way of Mandalore isn't so much a race as much as a creed, a way of life type thing. So, but obviously for Grogu, you know, he's willing to, you know, put that aside and focus on the bigger issue.
Right.
Which he's able to pull off, because there is something that, you know, there's something that Mayfield and Din have to do in order to gain access to information they need, but to do it, it has to scan your face. Unfortunately, Mayfield can't do it because obviously he's on record. You know, I mean, rap sheet notwithstanding. So Mando decides, okay, fine, I'll do it, and it works. But along the way, they end up running into this Imperial officer who Mayfield has a bit of a history with, and they get into. And again, not going to go into too many details, but they do talk about how, you know, some of their own people, you know, got lost, and it was just like, and apparently it doesn't sit. Long story short, Mayfield really gets very like disturbed at the fact that the Empire was willing to toss aside even their own people just to further a goal, and not really give any consideration to, you know, those people who were lost and things like that. And it was one of those things where, and I think this is where the name of the chapter comes from, because obviously Mayfield was just trying to like look out for number one, you know, for the longest time until he got thrown in the clink. But now when with what he does in this episode, and even at the end, you know, you really get a sense that, you know, he really in a way kind of finds his own cause and his own moral code, you know, or at least as much as someone like him can. Essentially, he finds something bigger than himself.
Right.
And it is one of those things, and it really makes me wonder how this is going to translate into later shows or even later seasons of Mandalorian, you know, and even not even Mando, but again, maybe other shows we'll see him in. And how that, and going forward there. Right. And of course, the end scene. Now, do you want to go ahead and say it, or do you want me to?
Because I know a lot of people were saying online that this doesn't make sense. Why would Din announce himself? And I thought this was kind of like a, I'm coming for you. You have something I want. I'm coming for you. You better be ready. I don't care how many people you have. I don't care that you're on alert. I am coming, and I will get.
And I like it because it really, it does several things. I mean, it's obviously your hero basically using your opponent's own things against them. Uh-huh. And again, a lot of people call it like a nod to the Liam Neeson film Taken.
Or Rambo.
That scene. And everyone who knows that scene, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Or Rambo.
Or Rambo. And it's one of those things where, Din is pretty much making it very clear. He is not talking as a bounty hunter. He is not talking as a mercenary anymore. He is talking as basically a, and again, as the armorer told him, you and the kid are now a clan of two.
Right.
And essentially, you are his father until you're able to reunite him with, with his own kind. Mm-hmm. So essentially, this is a dad, Papa Bear, making it very clear, you kidnap my kid, I'm coming after you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And no, it's like, I agree.
And just the look on Moff Gideon's face, and again, credit to the actor Giancarlo Esposito for really selling it, because he sold it.
Oh, yeah, he did.
I almost thought that he was going to smirk after Mando said that. But no,
the look of disdain and a little bit of fear in his eyes was all that I needed.
He obviously realized, oh boy. And I remember looking at that scene and thinking to myself, okay, at this point you can throw every stormtrooper, every death trooper you've got at him. You may as well make sure that you have a good supply of body bags.
Yeah.
Because that's really, because Mando's just going to, he's not going to stop until he gets his kid.
Yeah.
Period.
I good.
End of story.
And I really like this episode too as a whole. I thought it was kind of neat. I think it really redeemed Mayfeld as a character. And I love the transport scene. Very reminiscent of Indiana Jones. You know, I really like that Cara Dune is like the Chewbacca of this series. smacking together two bucket heads.
Yep.
Very much like Chewbacca and Zeb before her.
yep.
You know, and I love one of my favorite lines that I did not actually pick up right away is the part where they ask Boba Fett to do the mission. And he says, oh, they might recognize my face. And at first, I thought they were just talking about the fact that Boba Fett had worked with Imperials before, with the Empire before. But no, it was a nod to the fact that he was a clone.
That's true.
Genius.
You know, you can't really
But overall, I thought the episode was great. That tense scene between Mayfeld, the Imperial officer, and Din, where you're sitting there going, don't do it. Like, you know he's going to shoot him, but you're just sitting there going, don't do it. Don't you do it.
Yeah,
don't just, you do it.
You can feel the tension coming on that scene in spades.
For him mentioning Operation Cinder, that was another thing that really made me happy. Again, another book thing that's brought to live action. Operation Cinder, I'm really hoping we get to actually see this live action, finally. We've seen it in the video games. We've seen it in the comics. We've seen it in the books. Let's see it in live action now. I'd love to see those Imperial Messenger drones with old Palpy's face on it. I would love to see those in live action. But that was really cool to hear that spoken out loud. You know, this, that tension, and then finally them leaving, and then Mayfield shooting the Rhydonium and blowing up the entire base. That was awesome. Having redemption for that character was really, really good, and I'm very happy. Yeah. Maybe we'll see him again. Maybe we won't.
Yeah.
Who knows? So let's move on to the very final episode of season 2. And again, we're gonna keep this a little short. I know there's a lot to talk about. We're going to keep this a little short because we got to move on to our last topic because we're, again, really going on 2 hours here, and I want to keep this a little short. So the last episode, The Rescue. So now that Din and his crew know where Moff Gideon are, they decide to stage a fake landing, but they need some more people. So, of course, Din and Boba go find Bo-Katan and her crew through some, let's just call it, aggressive negotiations.
To say the least.
They finally get Bo-Katan on their side. And now that they get on to Moff Gideon's starship, try to find Grogu, get the Darksaber for Bo-Katan. I will say this is probably my most favorite episode of the season. It means a lot to me. I'm going to start this one off this time.
Go ahead. Take it away.
This episode means so much to me in so many different ways. First of all, the guest star of this episode did not take away from the real focus of this show and this episode, which was Din and Grogu.
Yeah.
You know, this father and son relationship that they have had, he did not take away from that at all, at that emotion, at that moment. But dang! When I saw that it was an X-Wing, and I thought, oh, the New Republic has come to help. And then they said, no, it's only one X-Wing. I went, no. No, no.
I did not want to believe it. Because I thought it was going to be some other character that we hadn't seen.
Right, but when he ignited that lightsaber, I knew that hilt right away. That is my favorite lightsaber in all of Star Wars. I was a little bit like, oh, maybe it's not who I think it is. And then when I got a clear, when you saw his black gloved hand, I was like, no, it's done. Doubt is over. I have no doubt who this person is.
For me, it was when I saw the blade in color.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. Oh, boy. This is...
So, action-packed, beginning to end, just like with the tragedy, they do not waste time with anything. They go right into it. They get right to the point. And then that scene at the end... Let's talk about the Dark Troopers, that scene where Din fights one. Wow, just...
Yeah, essentially, I likened it to basically him fighting one of the Terminators.
Oh, yeah.
The Empire's version of the Terminators.
Yeah.
And even the way they moved, it didn't look like it was CG. It felt like basically when in the original Terminator, where it was basically stop motion,
yeah,
it felt like that, but even with that, it had a sense of, like, a visceral feel.
Oh, yeah.
It had that sense of, like, uh-oh, these things...
Yeah, those are things that are not to be messed with.
Yeah. And it was just...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The one scene where it showed one of them actually grabbing Mando and starting to beat on his helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Actually literally punch it.
Yeah.
I almost thought for a moment that his helmet was going to break.
Oh, yeah.
I got a Dark Knight Rises vibe from that, because that's what Bane did exactly that. So I really thought as the Dark Trooper was doing that, I thought, uh-oh, I know Beskar's tough, but I don't think but who knows?
Yeah.
But no, that part worked, but just trying to stop one alone, and again, Mando threw everything he had at him. He shot him with his blaster, he even used the last of his whistling birds, but that still wasn't enough. It still wasn't enough, and you really felt like, uh-oh, how in the world are they going to get out of this now?
And let's move on to the fight with Gideon. I thought that was very well done.
Yep.
Seeing the fact that the Darksaber can at least heat up that pure Beskar was really cool. And it's not surprising, because this lightsaber was made by a Mandalorian. So I'm almost sure that this is probably one of the only lightsabers that could probably cut through pure Beskar.
Yeah.
That fight was awesome. I love that. I almost felt like Moff Gideon was kind of holding back a little bit, because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Or he probably felt, well, if I can't take him out, somebody else can. So, and then her giving the Darksaber to Bo-Katan and her refusing it because she has to fight for it is really neat. And it's weird because, again, spoilers in Rebels, Sabine gives Bo-Katan the Darksaber without a fight. So something must have happened between when Sabine gave it to him and when Din was giving it to her. So we'll find that out, I'm sure.
I actually have a theory about that.
Huh?
Yeah, I actually have a theory about that.
Yes.
Because I was listening to another podcast about that. And the podcast just talked about, what if the reason why Bo-Katan was able to accept from Sabine, and again, we don't know, but what if the reason why Bo-Katan accepted it from Sabine was because there were people there, witnesses, and I guess maybe the circumstances, you know, with along with that, made it possible for her to be like, okay, fine, I'll accept it, as opposed to being on a ship, surrounded by people who are not really Mandalorian, with the exception of her own, you know, crew members and of course Din himself.
Right.
But I mean, but who knows? I mean, hopefully in season three we'll get into that.
Right. Right. I think we will.
Because Din doesn't seem too keen on keeping it. He's like, look, you can have it. I don't want it.
All right. I think we've stalled enough. I think it's time to really geek out now. Let's talk about Luke Skywalker. What was your reaction when you saw Luke go to town on those Stark Troopers?
I'm just like, he's back.
Oh yeah.
I don't know who that was we saw in the sequel trilogy, but this is Luke Skywalker.
For me, it connects very well with The Last Jedi, and because he's in a different place now in the Mandalorian timeline that he will be in the Last Jedi timeline. But who knows what's going to happen, you know, between then. Who knows how much we're going to get. But seeing Luke Skywalker, we've seen him fight. You know, yes, he fought against Darth Vader. He fought at Jabba's palace. But we have never seen him go to town. And to not only see him go to town, but also see him like his father and show how powerful he is like his father is just so amazing and so wonderful.
For those who had read those old Legends books, basically Luke pretty much became Luke had pretty much become like a Superman, Captain America type figure, just in terms of his awesomeness and just his power, but also his heart. And it is basically it's Filoni and Favreau and the director, what's his name, Robert Rodriguez.
I don't know who directed this episode. I think it was Peyton Reed.
Peyton Reed. Yeah, I'm sorry, my mistake, Arcaders. Sorry. But yes, but just seeing him pretty much go to town and mow down those dark troopers was just so satisfying. And plus, again, it turns out they're droids. So go ahead.
I mean, we've never seen Luke do this. You know, we've only seen him fight Vader. We've only seen him go against just a few of Jabba's thugs. But we have never seen him, like, really just let loose. And, you know, that was cool. And, yeah, okay, I get it. The de-aging CG, yeah, it wasn't the greatest. But you know what?
It's
who
Luke.
Cares?
If you look closely at that scene, like as he's making his way to the bridge, the whole thing. What movie? What Star Wars film did it remind you of?
And Rogue One.
That's right, yeah. Rogue One. So, and again, this is another example over how parallels and nods, but you know, done to help enhance the story. Work.
Yeah.
Because it's like, again, you got that whole like father like son vibe. But not only do you get a chance to see Luke pretty much do what you'd expect him to do best, especially at this point in his life, but you also get a little bit of a sense of probably what Anakin probably would have been able to do if he had basically been in that situation to try and help his friends and his wife and whatnot, and he had to do that. Mm. There's no question he would. But now imagine for a minute if he did all that, but him much more in balance, if that makes sense. Yeah. You know, again, basically he'd be like, okay, which droid wants to join the scrap heap first? You know, that sort of thing. But still, it was a fantastic scene, not a single moment wasted. Mm-hmm. And I love another thing too. I think it's Bo-Katan who says it, it's a Jedi. It then cuts to it cuts right to Moff Gideon's face. And he's not smirking.
No. He's fearful. Like, you know, you thought he was fearful when Din was saying, I'm coming for you. Oh, no. No. That was just a little bit of fear. You get to see a whole bunch of fear in his eyes.
Yeah, it's almost like he's thinking, not him.
Yeah.
Not him.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it was worth it.
And he also proves... Luke also proves why they don't throw Luke into every story, too, because, like, you know, at this time, he's a Jedi Master, you know? he's going to come in and wipe the floor with everybody. It was a very... And Now that we talked about and got to geek about Luke, okay, let's talk about the final scene between Grogu and Din and how, like, emotional that was, how beautiful that was. And yep. Not only that, but again, echoes. Star Wars is all about echoing things.
Yes.
Having the let me see you one last time with my own eyes moment between Din and Grogu. Wow. Just... And after all of what Luke did and all the, like, you know, geeking out about what Luke did, and again, credit to the people that moment did not overshadow the true, you know, focal point of this series and this episode. You know, I give credit to Pedro Pascal. He did an amazing job.
He did.
And he sold that so well. And now that we've talked about all the episodes, let's go over the future real quick. And again, we're heading on almost 2 hours now, so let's go through this quickly. So the future. So we already know that Mandalorian season 3 coming next year. A lot of people were speculating that the Book of Boba Fett was going to be what Mandalorian season 3 was, but again, they announced today that the Book of Boba Fett will be a completely separate series. So that's great. So we're gonna have not only The Mandalorian, we're going to have the Book of Boba Fett next year. So that's awesome. I'm very excited for both of those things. I'm also excited, and we're just going to talk about a series that spin off from The Mandalorian. If you want to hear our take on all the other things that were announced, go to our last episode on the arcadearchives.com or on iTunes. We're going to be putting it up on Anchor here in a little bit, so you'll be able to hear that episode here soon. On other platforms, but right now you can go on thearcadearchives.com. You can hear the episode. We talk about all that stuff, but let's just talk about the spinoffs for The Mandalorian. Are you excited for the future of Star Wars?
Yes, I am now. More so now than I was before.
Yeah.
Because after the sequel trilogy, I thought, well, where can they go from here?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and now with this announcement, I can say it's looking pretty good.
Okay.
Not every show is going to be for everybody, but that's okay, because the key to this whole thing is now variety.
Right.
So there's going to be something for everybody.
Yeah. So let me ask you. We have three spinoff series from The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
We have the Book of Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. We have Ahsoka, and we have the Rangers of the New Republic. Now, out of those three, what are you most excited for?
For me, it's Ahsoka first, and the second, and of course with Book of Boba Fett being second. Yeah, Ahsoka first, Boba Fett second, and Rangers of the Republic third.
Okay.
I mean, Boba Fett, again, he's a character that I knew of, but more like, for me, it was more like me being attracted to, like, the mystique of the character. It wasn't really a character that I knew all that much of, so I know I got a lot of catching up to do on that. But still... Really, with that one, I'm really looking forward to, and seeing now he's basically king of the underworld, so now it'll be interesting to see where he goes. Mm-hmm. Ahsoka, enough said, because actually, given what she says in the Jedi, what she says to the magistrate, it's pretty obvious, it's pretty clear that, yes, all this is gearing up to something big. Like, we're having our own little MCU thing going on in Star Wars.
I want to try to stay away from speculation, but I want... I'll be allowed to do one thing, because this is our podcast and we can do whatever we want. If we can do one thing, do you think we're going to see Thrawn in live action?
I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
The question is how and when.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think that's what the Ahsoka series is going to be about?
Partially.
Okay.
Because I know that that Ahsoka's mission, especially for those who've seen Rebels, is to find Ezra. And we know, and even I know, that they went to the realm between worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And what role that part will play in is probably also something we're looking forward to. Because again, for all we know, the realm between worlds, I mean, who knows the possibilities are endless, so we don't really know what they're going to do. But again, with the right people, and they got the right people behind it, it's sky's the limit.
And then we also know that these three spin-off series from The Mandalorian are eventually going to culminate in a big epic event.
Avengers type thing.
Are you excited for that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because again, you've got one of the architects of the MCU in Jon Favreau. And you have Dave Filoni, mm-hmm. George Lucas's apprentice, mm-hmm. and the one who helped create the series called Clone Wars, Rebels, and now back again for Clone Wars, the final season. Honestly, I say just let them do their thing, and they will give you gold.
Yeah.
Period.
And then the announcement today that Robert Rodriguez, who did the Tragedy episode, he's going to be helping produce the Book of Boba Fett. What do you think about that?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, the guy's definitely got his own distinct flair for action.
Oh, yes.
And I think it's going to go it's going to go perfectly in line with who and what Boba Fett is and what things he's going to be going through.
Right.
And what he'll be facing.
For me, I'm excited about the future of Star Wars. Just speaking on these Mandalorian spinoffs, I think they're going to be really cool. I can't wait for Ahsoka. Ahsoka's one of my favorite Star Wars characters.
Yep.
So I can't wait to dive more into her character. I can't wait to dive into to Boba Fett and getting to know him a little bit more. I don't know anything about Rangers of the New Republic, so I cannot tell you. I don't think anyone knows anything about it, to be honest. So that is a wild card for all of us.
For me, Ahsoka and Boba Fett, I'm really looking forward to the most. In terms of just the shows.
If the Rangers of the
movies.
Yeah. If the Rangers of the New Republic can morph and have their own Zords, I don't know, man. I don't know about this.
I mean it's like, well, at this point, who knows? I mean, for all we know, they may even have Chuck Norris make a cameo, because after all, he did play a Ranger.
Hey, why not?
Who knows?
So we both agree, I feel, that the future of Star Wars is bright. It's probably brighter than it's ever been before. We're very excited about what's coming up soon. So I think that's going to wrap it for our discussion on Season 2 of The Mandalorian. If you haven't seen it yet, go to Disney Plus and check it out. It's a really great series, really great season. I think our next discussion is going to be on Super Nintendo World. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that. I think that'll be more of a traditional podcast, but I think we're going to continue doing these live discussion on Instagram Live from now on. I think I'm having a good time. Danny, are you having a good time?
Yeah, me too.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it was just an impromptu thing that I just decided to do, and then now it's morphed into this. So honestly, I'm more than happy to keep doing these live things as much as possible.
Yeah.
Plus, it'll help audiences, get into what we're doing and allow them to help participate. And again, arcaders, those who are watching live, and even those who will be watching it once it's fully done and recorded. If you have any ideas and for episodes, please chime in. We're more than happy to listen to ideas and see what we can do, because we really want to grow this show and really grow the site into something really special.
Right. All right, guys. So we're going to go ahead and leave it here for now. So once again, this is the Electric Circus Podcast. We are a podcast that's part of the ArcadeArchives.com. And you can find us there at thearcadearchives.com, thearcadearchives.com. We have lots of other podcasts and articles and stuff covering all of pop culture for both nerds of video games, for TV, for movies, comics, all that stuff. We cover all the stuff that you care about. So please find us on there. Now, if you want to get a hold of us individually, Danny, where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram under the pen name Ultrasonic9, as well as also on Twitter, and basically Danny the Ultrasonic Player, or now currently at the moment Danny the Holiday Arcader, under the hashtag or under the tag at Ultra SNC PLYR9. Sorry for making it convoluted. I do apologize for that. I'm also on fanfiction.net under the pen name Ultrasonic. And, of course, you can always find me on the site Arcade Archives itself for any articles that I do write. And, of course, shout out to Scooby-Doo 77. Hello. How's it going?
Hi, welcome.
Yep. And so you can follow me there. So, so you can find me on those places.
And you can find me on Instagram or Twitter at ubernerd527. That's UBERNERD @Jeff527 on both Instagram, here on Instagram, and on Twitter. You can also find me on Twitch, where I do streams on Sunday night streaming. You can catch me on, right now I'm playing through Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. So please check me out on Sunday nights. We're coming back this Sunday coming up. Last week we took a break because I was on a little vacation. So you can catch me on there starting this Sunday night, usually at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Please feel free to join us so that we can really have some fun out there. Feel free to join us at thearcadearchives.com. And you can also follow us here at The Arcade Archives here on Instagram. The Arcade Archives on Instagram. We're also on Facebook, so just look up The Arcade Archives. And you can follow us on there as well. So thank you guys so much for joining us. I hope you guys had a great time. We'll be doing more of these soon. And if you missed this episode, don't worry. We'll be posting this as a podcast on our site here in the next few days. So on behalf of myself, Danny the Ultrasonic Player, Raygun, we want to thank you guys so much for joining us for this discussion. And as Ray would say, keep playing like it's 1981, guys, and we will catch you later. Bye!
Bye! See you next time!
Hey, Arcaders, this is Ray Gunn from the Arcade Archives Network. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast that you're listening to. If you're listening on iTunes, please give it 5 stars. A lot of time and patience go into every podcast we do. 5-star ratings help us so we can continue giving you this quality entertainment every month. And don't forget to share us with your friends! If you're listening to us on YouTube, please give us a like and subscribe to our channel. And if you're over on our Facebook page, please like and share. Once again, we do this for you guys, and we enjoy doing it every single month. So every little bit helps. So please go online and like us today. Thanks. Keep playing like it's 1981, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye now.
The Electric Circus is a part of the Arcade Archives Network and is produced by What's This Button Do Productions. Hey guys, what's this button do?
That's what the button does.
The Electric Circus is a part of the Arcade Archives Network.